You're listening to EAA Radio. I'm Afterburner Al. Welcome to the Aviation Journalists Roundtable. At the table with me is David Hipschman, who is the editor of EAA Sport Aviation, Tom Haynes, editor-in-chief of AOPA Magazine, Mac McClellan, editor-in-chief of Flying Magazine, and Mike Sullivan, reporter, Atlantic Flyer, and Patrick Panzera, editor of Contact Magazine. And we're going to talk for a little bit until the Harrier takes off. So we're going to try to get in a few bits of conversation here before it goes. And the next thing I'd like to talk about is airports and communities and how they can, coexist in the 21st century, because we have a lot of development. There's some prime lands in and around airport. And even though they move into an obvious airport area, it just seems like the development wins out. And what can be done about this? What are the trends? Mac?
Well, the irony is that airports are flourishing where the people aren't. You fly around this country and you see the best facilities in small communities. In the major metropolitan areas, the airports are way over capacity, over tax. And it's unrealistic to believe, in my opinion, that we'll see a new airport, perhaps even new runways built in the major metropolitan areas. To me, it's a little bit a fraud almost by the part of the airlines and the FAA to be blaming delays on the airspace system and saying the problems could be cured by a modern airspace system, because the reality is it's pavement on the ground is what is setting the capacity of all of our flying. I wish I could be more optimistic, but I don't see a way, given all the environmental and community pressures, that we can even save the airports we have near the big cities. And expanding is just not in the cards.
Pat, what do you see for the occasional weekend aviator? Are they going to be thrust further and further out into the country?
Well, of course, when you look at like the situation with Van Nuys out in California, where, you know, at one point that was way out in the middle of nowhere, and then all of a sudden the community grew around it and decided that the airport was in the way. Contact Magazine is a nonprofit volunteer effort, and as such, I have a day job. It just so happens that I'm in the construction industry, specifically with housing design, and I have worked with planners who just have no clue as to what airports are about, what they bring to the table, and all of that. And I would say that we really need to educate our planners on a much lower level, to where they can incorporate their designs to work with the cities. Our airport, we were just talking about this. This aircraft that had to land on the freeway here the other day, every time I take off, I have to consider that option, because if I lose an engine on takeoff, that's my only option, is the freeway, and the airport was there first.
All right, way to finish, because I think the Harrier is looking like it's taxiing north at least, and I'm not sure if it's just gonna taxi by or if it's actually gonna do a show for us when I leave. I don't think that any pilot would shy away from putting on a little show before it leaves. Mike, what do you think of how the airports and communities can exist?
Well, I think for many small communities, many years ago, no one could even conceive of the growth of some of those areas, and so no strategic planning was done. And so, therefore, there wasn't even the beginning of a mechanism to influence the developers. I think right now the leverage that needs to be brought to bear is to show the community what the economic impact and advantage of having a small airport in their community is. And you're starting to see that, where companies are looking for a less congested location, and they're looking for a place to relocate where perhaps labor is cheap, but where there's an airport. And economically, we have to make the argument to the non-flyers, and I think it can be done. I think the numbers are there to support. Now, some small airports are struggling, and they truly are a small operation. But in many, many cases in the AOPA network, where they've gone out and supplied the correct materials to the coordinators, they've been able to make the case to the developing community. And of course, there'll be some hard cases where we have to play hardball and go to court and win the argument. But I think the small communities stand a chance.
Tom, the AOPA has done a lot as far as the airport support network and things like that. What does your organization see as the future?
Well, the important thing is, and we must act now, because in some places it already is too late, but it's proper land use planning. And getting officials involved to understand the impact of airports and why that the property around airports needs to be protected, can be used for industrial purposes and that sort of thing, but keeping residential and retail activities away from airports is important. And AOPA has recognized this for a long time. 10 years ago, took the sort of the bull by the horns with the starting of the AOPA Airport Support Network. We currently have 1,800 volunteers around the country that are sort of eyes and ears every day, watching out for airport issues, helping, engaging AOPA where appropriate, and using our materials to make a difference and protect airports. And that program turns 10 years old this fall, and we're going to have a lot of special events around that at AOPA Expo in Hartford in October. But it's been extremely successful, but there's still lots more to be done, and we need a lot more volunteers. The goal would be to have one at every, certainly at least at every public use airport around the country, to help spot those problems and head off problems before they become serious.
Anything to add, Dave?
Lots and lots to add. What is the name of that program? Is it the airport? What is a
airport support network?
Airport support network. Because I volunteered. I still have the decal on the back of my car from many, many years ago when I lived somewhere outside of Wisconsin. I was a volunteer. It's a wonderful, wonderful program, and it speaks to the first half of what I'd want to say. Before I came to work for the EAA, I spent several years working as a police officer. And I would remember whenever I'd get called out to a call where two neighbors were squabbling about something, the first thing a good police officer says, well, before you called us, did you talk to each other? And it's an astonishing thing what happens when a community, before they call the AOPA or call the EAA or start writing letters to Flying Magazine or to Contact, what happens if a consortium of neighbors and airport users and pilots get together, you host a barbecue, you try to create community. It's what it goes back to. Now, obviously, this may not work in highly congested areas, but more than 95% of America is still rural. Anybody that's flown over the country knows that. There's just way, way lots of space. So if we talk to each other as good neighbors, we can do a lot. The other half of that, in terms of innovative land use planning, every environmentalist, every good mom and dad that want a place for their kids to play thinks about open space. By definition, airports are open space. Land use planning that sees it that way, that puts parkland and playgrounds and swing sets around airports instead of strip malls and residential development, they're not only doing their communities a good service, they're helping to have families see what goes on at airports. And maybe we can bring back that fence that we used to look through when we were kids.
And then let's go into the next topic I talked about, because we're on that, and that is aviation security at general aviation airports. We've had a couple of bad news stories that we've seen on some of the network news about security risks at airports, which were poorly reported, at least the research of the way that the stories were assembled. How do you see the role of security at general aviation? Are we doing enough? Does anything need to be done? Are our airports secure?
Well, in the New York area, perhaps because it was the scene of the large 9/11 attack, the measures are extreme. I fly out of White Plains, just north of New York City, and the TSA, some arm of the government, paid for a many million, I've heard everything from $6 to $60 million system that monitors movement, visual, temperature, everything all around the airport. When an airplane is left outside, it has to be locked. They have a system of Denver shoes that they put on the nose wheels. A minimum of double locks, you know, your hangar door plus the door on the airplane. So in some areas, it's extreme. And I think it's over the top. We all have TSA badges we're supposed to display when we walk to our airplanes. So is there a threat? I don't think so. I mean, we all know that the airplanes are small enough, have low enough energy, they can't really damage a building in the same way that a large airliner can. But the public perception is there, and I think the general aviation is responding at least appropriately, and in some cases even over the top.
Patrick? What do you think for the builder and designer of aircraft in a small rural airport, other than locking their hangar, what else can they do?
Well, I don't know that 9/11 has really changed anything for us. We've always had those kind of issues in the past. I can recall several times when we've had a rash of people coming in and taking radios out of aircraft that were tied down. And it was probably somebody who actually flew in to do that. So no amount of gates or locks was going to stop any of that sort of thing.
And that's another thing. What's the difference in airport security between criminal activity and the so-called terrorist threat that certainly is on the consciousness of the general public that may not be so connected with an airport?
Well, the important thing, I think, is just awareness. I mean, where it's a small community, we know most of the people when you're out at the airport. You recognize who's there. You can usually spot somebody acting unusually, and then know what to do. And that's what AOPA did with its Airport Watch program when it was launched a few years ago, with the blessing of the Transportation Security Administration, which is just an awareness thing. We sent out a lot of signs telling people what to do, and that there's an dedicated 800 number that people can call to report suspicious activity. Obviously, if it looks like an imminently threatening thing, you should call the police. But it's a lot of it's just making pilots aware that they have responsibility to act when things look out of place or when somebody is acting in an unusual way.
From a community point of view, though, I think there's great benefit in bringing the non-flying public onto the airfield, showing them the planes, taking them through the hangars, showing them the perimeter, and talking to them about the capabilities of the plane and the limited capabilities, if you will, of the small general aviation community. Put the person in the plane, let them get a feel for what the argument really is. Look at the gate, look at the FBO. I fly out of Manassas inside the ADIZ. Okay, one
Bless
would call
you.
That an extreme challenge to the weekend flyer. Sure is a lot of fun, I might add. But, you know, all the folks walk through the FBO. You're looked at. Do you have business on the airfield? For those of us that keep planes on the airfield, we've been vetted. We have a key card. All the gates have cameras on it. You know, did it cost a lot of money? Yeah. Now, at the small airfield, I think it's a question, much more of a community feeling. Get the community people out to the airfield. Get the local political people out there. Get the media people out to the airport. Put them in a plane. Take them for a ride. And let them put things in context. Because, you know, several of the media people, it's so easy to blow things out of proportion. And, of course, some of the engineering studies have clearly shown that the damage that a general aviation aircraft would cause is minimal. I mean, the pilot is in way more danger right. than what he hits.
And we're going to step aside in a moment, and we're going to lead into this discussion about what you can do at your airport community when we talk a little bit about what the impact has been for the light sport aircraft and the sport pilot rule. You're listening to EAA Radio.